Good morning, and it's Saturday. It's Mayor Dan Alexander's weekly Good News radio program. I'm Riley Johnson, and I am honored to be joined this morning by Janice Garcia. I'd like to welcome her into the program with another segment. Janice, good morning to you.
Good morning, Riley. Thanks so much. And welcome to all of our listeners. This segment is called Baby Smart. My co-host is Kathy Whitmire, a member of our advisory.
Good morning. I'm a retired educator for Oconee County for over 30 years, and I'm presently the owner of the Center for ADHD, and this is where I work with children on focus, attention, and emotional regulation.
Our guest this morning is Jennifer Rich. Jennifer is the English Language Arts, there's a lot to say here.
Yes, there is.
Social Studies and World Language Instructional Specialist for the School District of Oconee County. She's completing her first year in this position. Previously, she was a first and second grader in Oconee County and a reading coach. Jennifer, drawing from your experience as an educator in the early grades, what do you think are the most important things a parent or caregiver can do to prepare a child for success in reading?
Good morning, Janice and Kathy. I'm so glad to be here with you guys this morning. I guess for me, the most important thing that parents or caregivers can do to prepare for success in reading for their children is just to do a lot of talking. Conversation and oral language is so important. You know, we say read, 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 but we also want to say talk, talk, talk. While you're in the grocery store, talking about things you see in the grocery store. While you're driving down the road and you hear something on the radio, ask questions. Talk to your children about what they're hearing and what they're seeing and what they're gathering with their senses. So for me, as an educator and as a former early childhood educator, it is a lot about the oral language piece. I always saw children that came in that were the most successful in reading acquisition. Those kids had been talked to a lot. They had great vocabulary, great oral language. Reading is also really, really important. The lab reading that we can give kids, and it builds that relationship with that caregiver as well. And those confidence skills, that's what's going to propel them into that great reading acquisition that we want them to have.
I 100% support that, and think that what I tell parents is think out loud. In other words, when you're organizing or you're cooking or you're planning, talk about what you're doing and how you're doing it. The children that are the most successful are the ones that are given a variety of experiences. And so, seize those times and those experiences to talk about them. Make little experience story books where you fold some paper in half and talk about what you did and draw some pictures about it. So it also helps develop what I think is lacking now with the technology is that awareness part, mm-hmm. Teaching observation skills, that sensory awareness, involving all the modalities when you're talking about it. These are incorporated into reading, and sometimes people think of just the reading itself, but there are a lot of supportive and foundational skills that need to be there too.
When those foundational skills kind of catapult us into reading when we get a child in pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, all those experiences that they've had outside of school, that goes into their writing. We do lots of making little books and telling our own stories. That's their foundation because, small children, it's just all about them, right? I mean, they're very centric. It's all about them. And so we have to tap into that. And we do that with the writing as well. So it's the reading-writing connection. So yes, all those experiences go into that good foundation.
So our Baby Read volunteers talk to parents about talking to their children. And we emphasize start talking to them from birth. Narrate your life, even if all you're doing is changing a diaper. Simply say, oh, I'm going to change your diaper now. Just constantly talk to those children. We get some pushback on that. Well, they can't talk yet. They don't understand what I'm saying. So what is your take on that, about talking to babies before they can talk? What are you accomplishing?
Oh gosh, you're accomplishing a lot. You're giving them that connection to you. They're hearing all of that fluent language that they're going to take into the reading of a book, the learning of letters. We know that from research, lots and lots of research, that letter sounds, letter ID has to be really fast and fluent. We know that. That catapults us into learning all of those pieces of sounds and all those letters into reading. So I would say 100%, talk to them as much as you can. Nursery rhymes, that builds oral language. Repetitive things. That's why babies like that kind of gooey, gooey language that we talk, sometimes, because it's high pitched too, and it's interesting to listen to. So, and I'm not saying do gooey, gooey language. I'm saying say real words, but yeah, definitely talk to them. Tell them what you're doing. 100% agree with that. As a former teacher, that is really important.
Well, I think, it's important for parents to understand that developmentally, there's a receptive language, which means they are receiving language before they can have expressive language. So it is very important, and to understand that they are developing vocabulary and language even when they're not talking.
Yes. Our founder talks about serve and respond language. And I know I've also heard the term dialogic conversation. These the same thing?
Dialogic conversation is kind of a new term for me as well. It was a book that the reading coaches and I studied this past year, and that we'll be taking next year into our K through 2 teachers to study, as we kind of learn those foundational pieces or reinforce those foundational pieces in our early childhood classrooms. But dialogic conversation is just engaging the child in conversation. That doesn't have to be through a read aloud. It could be through conversation, asking a question. So you're engaging them in the conversation. The next step is to repeat what they've said so that they know you're listening. It's that connection again. It's that acknowledgement. And then the third thing is to extend what you've heard them say. So adding a piece to it. If it's you're asking a child an opinion, what's your favorite food? My favorite food is pizza. Then the extend piece would be, oh, your favorite food is pizza? So is mine. I especially like the pepperonis and the green peppers. So you're kind of extending a little bit with the vocab. So it's that engaging the child. It's that repeating and solidifying. I've heard you. I'm listening, because listening is what Kathy talked about before, very important in the oral language. And then the last thing is just extending on that.
That brings back the old show and tell that we used to have in kindergarten.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we still have some of that, I'm sure, out there.
Educators talk about phonemic.
Yes.
And
yes.
Phonological awareness. Would you please explain to us what those terms mean?
Yeah, sometimes we get these terms quite confused, and I have to, in my mind, I confuse them sometimes too. Phonological awareness, I just think about it, is that umbrella that holds all of those pieces, the rhyming words. The phonemic awareness is also underneath that. So it's the hearing of the sounds, and we know that's where everything starts. That's what we've just been referring to, is that oral language. The phonemic awareness are those specific phonemes, and a phoneme is a letter sound. It is a sound, a single sound. So very different. The phonological awareness is the umbrella that holds all of those hearing pieces under. Phonemic awareness is just one of those pieces.
One of the things that I think is very important for parents to understand in this very sensitive time of brain development, to be aware of ear infections, because ear infections can have long-term effects on phonemic awareness or phonological awareness, in that it can literally kind of shut down the difference between short E and short I, mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Also, when we think of this, we're looking at the ability of auditory discrimination. So we want children to be able to identify differences, which will connect to the letters, with different sounds. So when you look at chimes or music, what's high, what's low, listening to frogs outside, or just listening mm-hmm. to sounds in general will help build that ability to process auditory information.
And we know it has to be processed auditorily before we get mm-hmm. to the phonics piece, which is the actual putting the sounds to the letters. That's sometimes a confusion as well, is what is the difference between phonemic awareness and phonological awareness and phonics? And phonics is just where we put, it's the decoding, it's where we put those sounds actually to those letters. And then the writing would be the encoding, that's the output. So they work so closely together there.
So dumb this down for me. What strategies can parents use to build phonemic and phonological awareness? I'm glad my children are grown.
Well, that's basically the foundation of everything. So, you know, we do a lot of that. A lot of that happens, honestly, before they get to us at the school level. If parents are talking to their children, nursery rhymes, repetitive stories, you know, parents will sometimes come and say, oh gosh, I've read this same book over and over and over. I'm like, great. They needed to hear that story over and over and over again, because that's all part of this great process. So yeah, just lots of rhyming. You're going down the road. Bat. What rhymes with that? Cat, sat, rat, fat. You know, okay, we've got, see, there's other parts of this too. When we get that down, there's at. Now, how do we change at to bat? Oh, we add a b, you know, and you have to watch those letter sounds. And I know I'm getting very specific with parents, but as teachers, we have to really clip those sounds too and make sure we're giving them that correct letter sound to attach to the letter.
I remember playing games in the car with my children, and just exactly what you've been doing, you know, coming up with, okay, let's make up rhymes for hat, and having, you know, back and forth. They would give up me a word, I would give them a word, back and forth. So I guess I was building all that without even knowing it.
You very much were.
Now, comprehension is really the reason we read, is mm-hmm. to learn something new. And so comprehension is so important. What are the things that parents and caregivers can do when they're reading to their children, which will increase the child's comprehension abilities?
Great question. Well, we know listening comprehension is first and foremost. You know, when a child gets into school and we say, oh, he has no reading comprehension, we sometimes have to back ourselves up to the listening comprehension and build that foundation first. That's why it's so, so important that children are read to a lot and have lots of opportunities to hear those nursery rhymes, to hear those repetitive texts, to hear that complex language that is inside books and that vocabulary. Read lots of different genres. We encourage our teachers to read lots of different genres to kids. Sometimes, you know, those nonfiction informational texts aren't as exciting or as beautiful as those fiction texts, but they're just as important because they build background knowledge for the world. And oh gosh, we didn't even touch background knowledge. That could be a whole nother episode, but background knowledge is just so, so important when kids come in. And if they have that coming into a text that they're going to read, for example, butterflies, if they know about the life cycle of a butterfly and they come into a book about butterflies, is that text going to be easier for them?
Meaningful.
Yes, and it's going to be a lot more meaningful. So just, you know, lots of reading, lots of absorption in books. Go visit the library. Get a library card. You know, several times a week, if you can, go in there and check out books and, you know, just a culture of books, because we know that we're in the age of lots and lots of electronic devices right now. Lots and lots. So we really, and that's something in schools that we are aware of as well, and we try to balance that. So just keep that in mind as well. Just let's balance that out. Maybe instead of handing a phone, let's hand a book or something, you know, that can help us balance those things out, because that's just going to continue to be an issue for us as we move forward.
Well, and I think what you said about the listening comprehension is extremely important. And how do you assess that? How do you increase that? You can do that with games. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't always have to be with a text or any kind of print.
Right.
Simon Says is a great one. The other thing that I would point out is give children time to process and answer. Sometimes we think that they are not listening, or we rush them in giving them an answer. So we have to be very in tune to giving them processing time. And some kids take longer than others to process and then retrieve the information and give you an answer. Yeah.
Those are some good hints, Kathy. I hadn't thought about, you know, I have a tendency to talk, but to also listen and give time. How very important that is.
Big one.
I think also, piggybacking off what Kathy said, just those higher level questioning techniques as well. You know, sometimes when we say, when we're reading with a child, what was the character? Who was the character? That's very recall. That's very, very basic. And that's where we begin. But then we kind of want to scaffold them. Well, why did that character do that in the story? Would you have done that? So making those connections is very important too.
And I would include building emotional vocabulary.
Yes.
That's one of the things I work with children on a lot. And when you're reading a book, how do you think that character felt? How did that make him feel? What does that expression tell you? Because a lot of our children are lacking the ability to express themselves.
Yes.
Everything is mad or sad. And so that would just enhance that aspect of it too.
Yes, very much so.
Well, this has been wonderful.
This
Thank
has
you
been.
So much for joining us, Jennifer.